Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.
And welcome to Pole Position on Rock Sport Radio. Sandy Alston with you alongside Adam Todd, broadcasting live on DAB Digital Radio across Central Scotland on TuneIn and online, talking motorsport from 8 until 9. So, on the show this week, Red Bull feeling dire after picking the wrong tyre, Butcher on cue to make it win number 2, is the title fight done with Marquez winning for fun, and Tanak leads the way as Meek goes astray. All this and more on Pole Position. Now, Lewis Hamilton took his 8th win of the season after winning the Hungarian Grand Prix last weekend. He finished ahead of Red Bull's Max Verstappen, with Ferrari Sebastian Vettel taking the final step on the podium. Hamilton was chasing Verstappen for much of the race, but Mercedes took a gamble, and Adam, it certainly paid off.
It did indeed. It was terrific strategy from Mercedes. They deserve a lot of credit. You know, Verstappen did such a great job to manage to hold the start and make sure he was leading. And then you can argue, you know, the car in second place does have options because it can afford to pit. It's not going to lose any track position because the Ferraris were pretty embarrassing in Hungary, you know, almost over a second, I think it was in the end, to the race winner, Lewis Hamilton. So that gave Hamilton and Mercedes some options. They then pitted on lap 48, decided to come in for a new set of tyres, and at the end of the day, the Red Bull just was on the tyres for too long in the end, and ultimately that allowed Lewis Hamilton to close in, and eventually it was a comfortable overtake, and Verstappen was left stranded out there and couldn't even put up a defence at all.
And you could argue it was harsh on Verstappen after taking, of course, the first pole of his career on Saturday, which is incredible in itself, isn't it? But, you know, credit to Mercedes. You know, they've got a lot of criticism over the last few years over some of their strategy calls at key points during races. They got that one absolutely spot on.
Absolutely. I think recently, or certainly in the past 5 years, Mercedes have been weak in strategy because they've not been used to fighting other teams. You know, it's been managing their two drivers, most notably Hamilton and Rosberg, and more recently Valtteri Bottas. But now you've got Ferrari and Red Bull in the mix. You know, both teams are still not capable of challenging Mercedes for either championship at the moment. But you do get races. We've had 4 great races in a row where Mercedes really have been under pressure. And you're right, you know, James Vowles does deserve a lot of credit, the Mercedes chief strategist.
But what about Hamilton's teammate, of course, Valtteri Bottas? He's been a driver under a lot of pressure recently, it's fair to say. 8th place finish at the Hungarian Grand Prix last weekend.
Not good enough, and time will tell whether it's a sackable offence. It's just not good at all for Valtteri Bottas. He's got to be doing better than that. He's in one of the top teams in Mercedes, and last season he didn't win a single Grand Prix. He finished 5th in the driver's standings, despite his teammate Lewis Hamilton, who won the championship comfortably in the end. So, you know, he had 2 good races out of 4 at the start, and since then, he's been nowhere. He's not been able to challenge his teammate. He was unlucky at Silverstone, but apart from that, after the first 4 races, you know, it's difficult to praise him at all, and it's tough because he is a really nice guy, but that doesn't cut at the top level.
No, it doesn't, and of course, Esteban Ocon waiting in the wings there as well. You know, Mercedes have said they'll make their driver call over the summer break. We're now at the summer break, Adam, so... You know, Bottas had a little window over the last few races where he's really under the spotlight and there's a chance for him to impress, and unfortunately he's just not done that.
Yeah, my view on Valtteri Bottas is that I think Mercedes ideally do want to keep him because I think it's an ideal partnership, you know, to have Lewis Hamilton, strong number one driver, and also Valtteri Bottas, who on his day can win races. He's not been doing that recently, though, Bottas, but I think Mercedes want it to work because they know if they bring in Esteban Ocon, it could cause a bit of friction, it could cause fireworks, and you could be going back to Rosberg versus Hamilton all over again, and they will certainly not want a repeat of that. Esteban Ocon, one of the most highly rated young drivers on the grid, he should be in Formula 1 this season. It's a shame he's not. And I think when you've got a talent like that, you really can't afford for him to be out of Formula 1 longer than a year. So Mercedes either need to find a seat for him or put him in instead of Valtteri Bottas.
So Hamilton and Mercedes might be leading the way, but are Red Bull that far behind? Well, joining us on Pole Position to talk more about this, I'm delighted to welcome back Luke Murphy from Formula Spy. Luke, Verstappen has been pretty impressive over the last few races, it's fair to say. And why can't he go on and make life very difficult for Hamilton over the second half of the season?
Well, good evening, guys. Yeah, quite rightly, you say he's on a great run of form at the moment. I think he's probably the in-form driver at the moment. He's, I think he hasn't retired in about a year or something like that. He's really had a remarkable record, and whilst I think the Red Bull car is probably still not going to be a match for the Mercedes, if Verstappen can just keep up the pressure over the next few races, you know, maybe there's the chance for the odd Mercedes mistake, you know, if we get some miscellaneous weather or something that can just give Verstappen a bit of a point swing over the next couple of races, then that might just encourage Mercedes to just start looking over their shoulder a little bit. And it's when the pressure starts mounting, and that's when mistakes can happen. So it's going to be, the next few races are going to be really, really pivotal as to whether Mercedes are going to sort the championship or whether Verstappen can get himself right in the mix.
Look, do you put it down to the sheer brilliance of Verstappen here that he's performing as well as he is recently? Or is the Red Bull package perhaps better than we've initially given it credit for? Because initially when they made the switch, or they announced the switch to Honda Power, everyone was very sceptical, and some people suggesting that 2019 would be a bit of a write-off, not just for Red Bull, but also for Verstappen. But that's not proven to be the case.
No, you're right. I think to begin with, everybody was thinking that this would probably be a difficult season for Red Bull, and that their only chance would maybe be occasionally picking off the odd podium. But you're right in saying that, you know, they now have a couple of wins under their belt. They didn't really shine at tracks that maybe you'd expect them to. You know, like Monaco, for example, that was a Mercedes one too. You know, Spain, I would have maybe expected them to do a little bit better as well. But yeah, I think Red Bull, they're probably just, probably because of the brilliance of Verstappen, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't think anybody expected Pierre Gasly to be so far behind Verstappen as he is. And whilst Gasly's probably not doing such a great job, I think that difference is being stretched by the fact that Verstappen is just on such a great run of form, and particularly since he had his, I think it was his crash in Monaco last year, not this season, the season before, where after that he really got his act together and has just been on a great run of form. So I think he's just grown since then. And personally, I think it was part of the reason why Ricciardo decided to leave Red Bull, because Verstappen was becoming the number one man at Red Bull.
And that brings us on nicely to Renault. Look, I have to say, I've been utterly woeful so far this season. Well behind McLaren, who have the same power unit, behind Toro Rosso. I mean, has this been a career-ending move for Daniel Ricciardo?
Wow. Potentially, if they don't make much in the way of improvements over the next couple of years. I mean, a team like Renault would probably have their eye on the 2021 regulations, where they can dump a whole load of resources into developing the car for that. So Daniel Ricciardo and Renault are probably in it for the longer game. Now, it's true that they'll probably not be too happy with the way this season's going. They're down in sixth place at the moment, behind McLaren and Toro Rosso. And it's just been, it's hard to really pinpoint where it's gone wrong. It's just not been a big step forward for them. They missed out on chances in the Hockenheim Ring to get big points in there, but they've just been completely outperformed by McLaren at the moment. And at the start of the season, if you were banking on a team to try and get in amongst those top three teams, the Ferrari, Mercedes and Red Bull trio, if there was a team to have got in amongst them during the season, then you'd have put money on it being Renault, but that's just not materialised at all, and it's a shame. But I think they're going to have to be a bit patient, really go back to base, work out their problems, and maybe just focus more on 2021 when that becomes a bit more firmed up.
I mean, Ricardo must be extremely frustrated, though, at this situation. As you mentioned there, you know, if there was one team that you expected to take the fight to the top three, it was going to be Renault. Instead, he's lucky if he can even fight for the points at the moment, the way things are going. And yet he's watching Max Verstappen, who, you know, Ricardo could hold his own against Verstappen. Verstappen was starting to get the better of him more regularly in the final year at Red Bull. But nevertheless, you know, Ricardo, he is capable of winning races. And it's such a shame for Formula One fans as well that Daniel Ricciardo is nowhere near the front, because I think every F1 fan is missing him there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's becoming more and more obvious now. You know, you see Daniel Ricciardo in the press conferences, in the interviews, and it's just not looking. You know, he's not quite as bouncy. You know, he's quite a bouncy, jovial kind of guy, but you can just see him just getting a little bit annoyed at the situation. You know, sighing, shrugging his shoulders. And it, like you say, it's not good for the fans, because Daniel Ricciardo and Red Bull, you know, hugely popular combination. But as I say, there might just have to be a bit of patience in this. It's a shame, but they're just going to have to ride it out. And all he can really do is just keep being a nuisance to Nico Hülkenberg at the moment, because he's really taken the fight to him, almost taking the kind of number one spot at Renault, and may even, should Ocon have to look elsewhere, may have kind of forced Renault into looking away from Hülkenberg and going towards Ocon. So he's really coming and shaking up the team, but yeah, it's just a case of patience, unfortunately.
And this is all interesting about Nico Hülkenberg, because personally I look at Ricciardo and Hülkenberg and I think that is a great pairing, probably up there in the top three at the moment of strong drivers paired together as teammates. And yes, you're absolutely right, Ricciardo has got the better of Hülkenberg. But I think, you know, a lot of people saying, you know, perhaps it's time for Hülkenberg to go, I think this is really detracting, because I don't think Hülkenberg and Ricciardo, you know, I don't think the drivers are the problem at Renault. Yes, Hülkenberg made a bad error in Germany, which cost the team a lot of points. But, you know, Hülkenberg's shown in previous years that, you know, when he does have the machinery, he can almost outperform it and put it in strong positions. So the drivers aren't the issue with Renault. And, you know, really, at HQ, the amount of money that's been invested in this team, they should be doing a lot better. They were saying at the start of the year, you know, we want to be best of the rest. They finished last year top of the midfield. Why on earth is this team going backwards?
Absolutely. I know they had a couple of issues with reliability at the start of the season. I think that caused them to maybe have to turn down their power units a little bit. But if it's the same power unit that's going into the McLaren, you know, how much of an excuse can that really be? You mentioned Nico Hülkenberg there. I think when it came to Germany and everyone saw him in this podium position, I'm pretty sure the whole Formula One fan base was rooting for him, because he famously doesn't have the podium finish. But something just seems to happen when he gets into these half chances of a podium, where something seems to just go wrong for him, and it's a strange phenomenon, to be honest with you. And does that mean Renault, if they do come good, would maybe want a different driver who can maybe handle those situations further at the front of the field? It is a bizarre situation, but, you know, like you say, very quick driver, it just hasn't happened. And essentially, there's a lot of thinking to do for Renault and everyone back at Enstone.
Luke, always a pleasure. Thanks very much for your time here on Pole Position.
Pleasure. Cheers.
That's Luke Murphy from Formula Spy there. Stay with us as we talk more motorsport up next on Rock Sport Radio.
Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.
Now, St Etherton was the venue for last weekend's British Touring Car Championship action, with Tom Ingram winning the first race of the day before Colin Turkington in race two. Scotland's Rory Butcher took the top step of the podium in the brilliant final race after making his way through the grid, passing a shut-in Jason Plato to take the lead and take his second win of the season. I'm delighted to say that Rory joined us on the show now. Rory, what a win that was. You must have been absolutely delighted with that one. And we'll hope to chat to Rory in just a moment. There are just a couple of signal problems before we get in. Rory is, of course, doing very well in the standings. He's up there third at the moment and on 177 points. Colin Turkington, of course, leading the way on 236 points. Andrew Jordan second on 200. Rory third on 177, followed by Josh Cook, who is on 166 points. Let's try again for Rory. And Rory, thanks very much for joining us on the show. Just talk us through the win from your perspective.
Yeah, it was a massive, you know, victory for myself and the team. It's my second win of the year, but the first one I had was it was through like a technicality. Basically, someone got a penalty and I ended up taking the victory at round one. So this was very, very special and maybe a little bit unexpected as well. I'd came all the way through from 12th on the grid and I'd had a pretty tough day up until that point and managed to carve my way through the field and take the win, and it made the journey back to Scotland a lot easier.
Rory, just take us back to the start of the final race, because I believe you and the team made a couple of tweaks to the setup as well ahead of that one.
Yeah, we'd had a particularly tough weekend. You know, we're normally, you know, battling out regularly in the top five and for podium positions, and we hadn't broken the top 10 all day, and we basically sitting in the debrief room and we're scratching our heads, and we just decided to take, there was only one way to go and it was to take a risk. So we kind of made some fundamental changes to the car for the race. We didn't know how it was going to go, but I could tell even on the warm-up lap that it was in the right direction, and it turned my whole day around.
And just take us through that move for the lead as well, because three of you side by side in the back straight going into Brundle's absolutely fantastic to watch. What was it like inside the car?
It was pretty exciting inside the car, but I'd been sitting behind the both Ash Sutton and Plato for maybe two or three laps, and I'd just been observing how, you know, they'd been having a very aggressive kind of battle together, and I was just waiting on my timing, and I managed to get a really good run on both of them, and I just picked the right way to go. I went to the inside of the corner, got alongside Jason Plato, and I think I really had the safest place to be. And because I'd braked very late into the corner and Jason tried to do the same, he ended up running a bit wide and him and Ash Sutton collided. So I then turned into Brundle's and came out, looked in my mirrors, and I had some clear air, so I knew the wind was in the bag.
And it was one of the ones on the broadcast cameras when Ash Sutton had collided and he was kind of coming off and onto the grass. It almost looked like he was going to hit the back of your car as well. It must have been, was it a little bit nervous in there, or are you just kind of focused on that, you have got the lead?
Well, I wasn't aware that the two had actually, you know, made contact, so it was only once I'd got out of the corner and Ash came across the actual track, I realised that it had spun, and I was completely unaware. But when I watched it back, just like you've said, it looks rather close, and I think I was quite close to maybe getting spun off the road myself.
Rory, just take us into the mindset of a driver when you're in a situation like that, and you mentioned you've got Ash and Jason, they're both fighting tooth and nail. Are you looking for a particular point in the track to try and make your move, or does it come somewhat instinctively and you're just hoping for a chance where maybe they do bang wheels and you can maybe slip through?
I think it depends on the situation and the circuit. You know, some tracks have very specific places where you can overtake, and others, you know, there's maybe more opportunity. I think in this scenario, I was actually just expecting the two of them to make it a bit easier for me. Because they were going, you know, fighting so aggressively, I was kind of sitting there and just thinking that the two of them would make a mistake and I would end up just picking up the pieces, but it didn't happen and I ended up having to kind of elbow my way through. So I could see there was another car behind me who was starting to put a bit of pressure on, and I just started to, timing was important. I just had to make the move there and then.
Just talk us through the last couple of laps, Rory, as well. Must have been a very special feeling to take the chequered flag on the road.
Yeah, straight away I was kind of just reminiscing back to the last event before the summer break, and I was actually hunting down Jake Hill for the lead, and had lots of pace and probably would have overtaken him and taken the win at Alton Park, but I ended up hitting an oil slick and running wide and finishing fifth, and I didn't really forgive myself for that, so I definitely made sure that I got the car home on across the line in first place, and Josh Cook was putting a bit of pressure on. He was kind of gunning for me on those last couple of laps, but I just kept my cool and just made sure that I saw the checkered flag.
And Rory, how would you kind of sum up the season so far from your perspective?
I think it's been a fantastic year. You know, we're an independent team and we're leading the independent team championship. Leading the independent drivers championship, but I think what's even more special is the fact that I'm third overall in the championship in the overall standings, and the only cars ahead of me are the two BMWs of Turkington and Jordan. So it's I think we've hit something. You know, we've got a really nice little thing going on at the moment. I'm feeling really confident. The car's going well. I've got a great bunch of people around me, and it's just a case of just trying to keep it going until the end of the year. And Turkington's got quite a big gap at the moment, but I still don't think it's over. Unless championship things change over one weekend or two weekends. So I'm just focused on doing the best job I can. And, you know, especially with Knockhill coming up in September on September 15th, got my home race. And I think the home knowledge is going to help me there.
Rory, I'm interested to get your thoughts on how the new Civic Type R that you're driving for this year compares to last season's MG effort. What's the kind of differences on track in terms of not just, of course, in performance, but do you feel like it gives you more confidence when you're out there?
I think it's an interesting question. The MG was a very nice car to drive. It gave me a lot of confidence, and in actual fact, I could really race hard in the car. So I scored, a good amount of points last year, almost 100 points over the season in that car. But in my eyes, and I think in a lot of other people's eyes, it's probably, all the other chassis on the grid have maybe moved on slightly. So you're in the MG, I was unable to deliver like a very fast lap time over one lap in qualifying, where the Honda, I can do that, and it's down to the physics of the car. You know, I think it's just the centre of gravity is a little bit lower, and the wheelbase is a little bit shorter as well. And I think it's such a subtle differences, but it just gives me that edge, and I'm able to get the most out of it, and keep myself at the sharp end. So, but the MG was a great learning car for me. I was able to learn the craft of the touring cars, and it's stood me in good stead.
Rory, how beneficial has it been to have Mike Bushell as your engineer for 2019?
It's been fantastic. It came as a bit of as a shock to have Mike as an engineer, because actually we were competitors last year. He's a driver, but I wasn't aware of how technically minded he is and how strong an engineering mind he has. He's kind of blown me away, to be honest, this season. And it all came about a few days before the first round, where we changed engineers, and me and Mike have made a great team. He actually sent me a quite motivating message this morning via text, and it's just trying to make sure we're focused on the right stuff. And he's just been great from a number of points of view. So.
And what sort of things is he pointing out to you during a race weekend, Rory? And you mentioned the fact that he is, of course, a driver as well. Does that give him an extra benefit to you as well when you're out there on track?
I think it does. I think it does, because he is, I respect him as a driver. And like I say, we were competitors in the same category. There's a lot of weight behind what he says, and he has a great understanding of what I'm going through inside the car. When we go for track walks, or when we're looking at footage or data, we can really bounce stuff off each other. And I've got another pair of eyes and ears with him. You know, engineers are also very helpful, you know, but Mike has that other skill set and that other experience, and it's really playing into our hands.
And Rory, just finally, what's your message to your fans ahead of the next event at Thruxton next weekend? We've got Knockhill, of course, to look forward to over the next wee while as well, as you mentioned. Doing very well in the Championship now. What's your message to them?
Well, yeah, I'm feeling good. I think the message goes out that, yeah, I'm going to just keep trying to push for these big points races, but also make sure that I consolidate when I have to and bag the points. You know, it's about scoring points, and only in situations like in race three when I've really got the momentum behind me can I score a win. And yeah, it's just about being smart. Still got a number of races to go, but I think the good thing is that the circuit's coming up. I'm really confident at, and yeah, I'm gunning for it.
Excellent, Rory. Well done again. And thanks very much for joining us on the show.
All right. Thank you very much.
That's Rory Butcher there speaking to us on Rocksport Radio.
Now, moving on to MotoGP, and Marc Marquez won his 50th race in the Premier class as he won the Czech Republic Grand Prix. Ducati's Andrea Dovizioso was second, with Jack Miller taking the final step on the podium. Joining us to discuss the race and to look ahead to this weekend's action in Austria is Joshua Close from our friends at the Checkered Flag. And Joshua, another sensational ride from Marquez.
Yes, that's right. I'm pretty sure the rest of the field wish they were still on that summer break, because that was some statement made by Marquez to everybody else. The race itself was, you know, by modern day standards, a bit average, but that was simply because Marquez cleared off. You know, nobody could get near him the entire weekend. And that qualifying session on Saturday, when he went out on dry tyres and it was raining, was just something to behold. I was sure he was going to fall off. He only goes nearly 3 seconds faster than everybody else. So that was some statement for him and the team to make. You know, he's telling everyone, I am the guy right now. And, you know, it's a scary thing to think about, really, with so many races to go. And you know, if that weekend's anything to go by, he could potentially win the majority of the races now.
And as you mentioned there, the performance on Saturday, that was really the headline act of the entire weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, arguably it was more exciting than the race itself, but I've never seen anything like it. You know, Jack Miller tried to do the same thing and he fell at the final corner. But it's just yet another example that Marquez is just on another level. You know, I'm still trying to explain to myself now how he did that on dry tyres. It was unbelievable stuff, it really was.
And Marquez, he's won at every track on the calendar except this weekend's venue. So if his opponents are hoping for Marquez to take his foot off the gas because he's effectively got one hand in the championship, that's certainly not going to be the case, because he's going to be desperate for victory this weekend so he can complete the calendar Grand Slam, if you can call it that.
Yes, that's absolutely right. MotoGP has only been back at the Red Bull Ring for 3 years now, and Ducati have won every year with three different riders. But the last couple of years, Marquez has been edging closer, and that'll be playing on his mind as well. You know, we lost out to Dovi on the last corner in 2017, then Lorenzo last year. So he'll be more determined than ever to, as you say, complete the Grand Slam, if you like. And if he does do that, then, you know, Dovizioso's and Ducati's bad dream that they're going through at the minute will become a nightmare. Because if they can't beat him there, where can they beat him?
And as you mentioned, we have had some thrilling races in Austria. You know, 2017, as you mentioned, great battle between Marquez and Dovizioso. How did Ducati approach this one? Because it is a track that, as you mentioned, you know, they've had a strong record here. But how do they kind of ruffle the feathers of Marquez? Because you feel someone's got to take the battle to him and really get Marquez out of his rhythm, because once he gets going and once he hits the front, you just know that's him until the checkered flag falls.
Yes, that's right. One thing they're going to have to do is definitely qualify, you know, on the front row. Dovizioso's not always been one to be too bothered about that. But you look at Marquez starting first or second, if he gets to that first corner first, which he's more than capable of doing now on the Honda, and, you know, he could be gone. So the plan for Ducati from the get-go is you need to get on that front row. You need to launch off the line straight away and try and ruffle him up. Because if he gets away at the moment, there's no catching him.
And what have you made?
And if it does...
Sorry, on you go, Joshua.
So if it does come down to a head-to-head battle, you know, if he does get in front of you, you need to bite back straight away. That's the one thing Valentino Rossi always said, you know. If Marquez gets in front, you need to bite back straight away and upset his rhythm. So that has to be the aim.
And what have you made of Ducati's year as a whole? You know, Dovizioso well off the championship. I think it's 63 points. Danilo Petrucci's had a few good results, you know, none better than that race win in Mugello in Italy. That was incredible. But, you know, apart from that, not been a lot to shout about.
No, that's right. It's certainly on the side of Dovizioso, you know, it has to go down as a disappointing year. Having only won the first race in Qatar and he hasn't beaten Marquez since, he hasn't really been near. When there has been a chance of a sniff at getting by, he seems to not have enough aggression in him. We saw that at Mugello where he could have dived down the inside on the last lap, but he didn't. Maybe it's lack of confidence in this year's machine, I don't know. But for Dovizioso, definitely disappointing. For Petrucci, you know, he'll probably be delighted. You know, he's finally got that maiden win. You say Italian rider, Italian bike, Italian round. He's had a couple of podiums. He's third in the championship. For him, he's probably having a fantastic year and loving every second of it. So it's contrasting sides, that's for sure. Dovi will be disappointed. Petrucci will be happy.
And one rider I'm interested to get your thoughts on is Jack Miller. He's on the podium, showing good pace. He's had some decent results this season, but this all seems to be overshadowed with rumours of Jorge Lorenzo potentially taking his ride for 2020. What are you hearing in that front?
Yeah, that came as quite a surprise to me when I saw that today. As you say, Jack Miller is getting the best out of the Pramac right now. Got a podium at the weekend. You know, he's quite consistent. And he seems to admit today in the press conference that there could be some truth that the talks are going on with Lorenzo, which surprised me a little bit. You know, would Lorenzo really go to Pramac? Would he go to a satellite team? If he does, they're going to have to ensure that, you know, it's as full factory as they can possibly make that bike in order to keep him happy. But even then, that's going to ruffle some feathers in the main camp. You know, Dovizioso is not going to be pleased if they go and push a lot of money on Pramac for Lorenzo to challenge for the title again. Of course, it's all rumours right now. I'd still be surprised if it actually went through, and it would certainly be harsh on Jack Miller, in my opinion. But if that opened up the door for Jack to go to Repsol, then, you know, that could be interesting for sure.
Definitely. Now, one of the big talking points throughout the year has been Valentino Rossi and his future in MotoGP. He went through that terrible run of form and he had three retirements in a row, a sixth place for him last weekend in the Czech Republic. What have you made of the whole situation at Yamaha this year? Because, you know, initially in the first couple of races, looked as if they had made improvements from a disastrous year last season. But and of course, Maverick Viñales had a couple of good results, but they seem to be going backwards again. Now, it really is difficult to watch.
Yes, the whole Valentino Rossi saga over the last few months, as you say, has been disappointing. And Yamaha are just so hit and miss right now. You never know what you're going to get for them. You know, Viñales, as you say, had back-to-back podiums, but then he finished 10th at the weekend. Quartararo was nowhere. It's so hard to really, you know, kind of put a finger on what the problems are and who to blame. You know, Valentino Rossi was the top Yamaha this weekend. He's still the top Yamaha in the championship, but people are kind of putting the pressure on saying he needs to retire, which he may well do if he's not enjoying it anymore. We'll see over the next couple of races. He finished sixth at the Red Bull Ring last year, top Yamaha there as well. And the key for him, he's always said, if I'm enjoying it, I'll keep on riding. So enjoyment is a big part for him. And how much longer will he enjoy finishing sixth, seventh, eighth every weekend, unable to challenge for the podium? If that continues, he may well decide to call it a day, especially if Viñales ends up beating him in the championship.
And finally, Joshua, how important is it for Yamaha to be competitive and get back towards the front? OK, Maverick Viñales has won one race, but they're not there on a regular basis. And people talk about this being a golden era of MotoGP with Honda, Ducati, now Suzuki up there and Yamaha. But you just get the sense, you know, at the moment it's really Marquez and Dovi who appear to be running the show at the moment. You really want Yamaha back in there. to take the fight. So it is exciting again. So we've got Hondas, Ducatis, Suzuki, Yamahas all going for the victory, because it just feels this season that it's not been as exciting. The racing's not been as exciting, and Marquez has been allowed to dominate races in a way previously he hasn't been.
No, you're absolutely right. As I said earlier, you know, the race at the weekend just gone was probably one of the, you know, worst I've seen in a long time, because nothing really happened. It's all well and good. You know, Marquez is an exceptional rider. We all accept that. You know, he's on another level. But we need close racing. We need unpredictability. There's no point going racing if, you know, Marquez is going to win 10 races a year and dominate the championship. So we need Yamaha to pull it round. You know, you're right. It's vital that they sort their act out, get the perfect setup, and get battling at the front again. You know, there are some signs that Suzuki will get a little bit stronger, but at the minute they're only good in the corners. So they're just out in the straights, and you know the Honda's now faster than Ducati. So Yamaha need to make the biggest improvements, but everybody does, to be fair to them as well, because Marquez is just getting further and further away now, and it is a concern.
Joshua, thanks very much for joining us on the show. Always a pleasure to chat MotoGP with you.
Thank you very much.
That's Joshua Close there from our friends at the Checkered Flag, speaking to us here on RockSport Radio.
All right, moving on to the rally stage now, and Toyota's Ott Tänak took his fourth win of the season after dominating Rally Finland last weekend. Citroën's Esa-Pekka Lappi was second at his home event, with his countryman Jari-Matti Latvala taking the final step on the podium for Toyota. Now, Tänak's win on the road and the power stage puts him 22 points clear at the top of the championship with just 5 events to go. So let's find out if anyone can stop him by speaking to rally expert David Halley, who joins us now. David, I mean, based on that performance, Tänak's really put him in the driving seat for the title here.
We spoke last week about the previous event where Sebastian Ogier had trouble, so had Terry Neuville, and Ott had not been able to capitalise on that. This time round, Terry and Sebastian weren't really in the hunt, and Ott just took them to the cleaners, and he's now got that gap, which 22 points is not insurmountable, obviously, as we've seen in previous years, but it certainly gives him a step towards, and he's now coming up to the 3 events that he won last year. So yes, I think he is in a very, very strong championship position.
David, the one thing that really impressed me about Tänak's performance last weekend was his display on Friday. You know, he's there, he's cleaning the road, his times are still very competitive. He then goes into Saturday and does even better. You know, it's hard to pick a flaw in Tänak's game at the moment.
Correct. He's really got it all at the moment. The road cleaning is not quite so bad in Finland as it is in some of the other events, and he has got to get through Turkey, where he will be opening the road in some very, very poor conditions. So he's got that one to get through, but he worked out last year how to get to the end of that event, starting near the front and getting to the end of the event winning it. So he's got the full set of cards at the moment. He seems to have all the bases covered. It's whichever cliche you want to use, he's there.
And just staying with Toyota, David, a good drive for Jari-Matti. We spoke on the show last week about the importance of him getting a strong result at Rally Finland. Of course, he had that puncture on stage 14, the car looking very badly damaged as well, but put that to one side, I thought it was a very strong outing from him.
He was very naughty, though. He and Chris were up in front of the headmaster with their jotters down the back of their trousers. They had team orders to follow Ott and make it a Toyota 1-2-3 to really put the pressure on in the Manufacturers' Championship. Both Jari-Matti and Chris decided they were going to have a go at Ott, and Chris came off worst, obviously, out of the event. But Jari-Matti had that puncture, which was regarded by the team management as his own stupid fault, and he was lucky to get it back to third. So, yeah, there are frictions within that Toyota camp at the moment, and Tommy Mäkinen, the boss, has got the other two, very much on the naughty step at the moment.
And he said, Tommy Mäkinen, that they forgot to stick to the plan and what have you. Now, I'm not too sure where I stand on this one, David, because you could make the case that says Rally Finland was a wasted opportunity for Toyota, because they could and probably should have made that a 1-2-3 finish. Chris Meek striking the same rock at the same point as Latvala and what have you, ending his hopes of a good result. But on the other hand, you've got a very quick car and you've got three quick drivers, they're going to go for it.
They are, yes, and that's the very nature of it. The boss can talk till he's blue in the face about how he wants a 1, 2, 3 and behave yourselves, but the minute those little red lights go off and the green light comes on at the stage start, the red mist comes down and off they go. They are big boys, they should do as they're told. Tommy Mackinnon is paying their quite substantial wages, so they should do as they're told, and it is a team sport, and what Toyota want to do is to have the double. They want the manufacturers and the drivers' championship. They had the manufacturers last year because of strong team performances, where the other teams weren't able to put a team performance together, doing something daft like they did on Rally Finland. We'll just upset the boss. And the one person you don't want to upset is the boss.
Yeah, and David, I wondered earlier in the year if Chris Meek's co-driver Seb Marshall had maybe tamed him early on, because he looked steady enough, and there was moments where you could say that was just unfortunate. But when you look at the stats, he's the only full-time driver out there without a podium so far this season, and he's a car that we know is the quickest car in the championship. He's got to get the results. It's as simple as that. He's, you know, Tommy Mackinnon, of course, said as well this week that he's on a deal until the end of the year, which was quite telling as well, because we know Rovan Perra is going to go there. There seems to be a suggestion that Tanak may or may not be staying now. How much of that, I believe, I'm not too sure. But long story short, Meek has to deliver.
He has, or he is out of the game altogether. He has had so many chances. He is the unluckiest man in rallying. If there's a rock to be found, Chris is going to find it. Mm. It's always the case, and he finds it harder than everybody else. You know, Yanni Matti bumped into the rock, had a problem with the puncture, the flailing tyre did the damage. Chris hits the same rock and takes the corner off the car. Mm. He just doesn't seem to have any rub of the green, or however you want to look at it. You remember his win in South America a couple of years ago via the car park on the last stage. He nearly threw it away on the last stage. You know, it's just, he's a very exciting driver to watch, but he's very much, as we've said before, like his mentor, the late Colin McRae, who would have celebrated his 51st birthday this week if he'd still been with us. But Chris just drives flat out. He does struggle a bit to calm it down, and Seb Marshall's been trying very hard to calm him down, but it hasn't quite worked yet.
David, before we move on to Hyundai, I want to get your thoughts on M Sport and Timo Suninen in particular, because he finished in 8th place. I thought he was going to go well here, his home event, of course, but he seemed to struggle on Friday morning, never really recovering from that. He was complaining of a splitter problem as well. But what do you put that down to? Because I get a bit confused when Suninen's complaining of a problem at the front. Latvala goes and hits a rock on stage 14 and then goes and takes the stage win in 15. How much of that was just a confidence issue with Suninen?
Absolutely, 100%. It's a confidence issue. The speeds in Finland are enormous. The trees are incredibly close. The car is moving around on the gravel all the time. The driver has to have supreme confidence in the car that it's not going to bite. And that was where Timo just didn't seem to have that this weekend. Gus Greensmith was in the other car. As we know, Elfin's injured his back and unfortunately won't be back even for Germany. But if you watch some of the shakedown footage from Gus Greensmith, we know he had a problem in Portugal where the car flew and he didn't fly it particularly well. He had exactly the same problem this weekend in shakedown. It flew and it scared him, and he was on the back foot from that point forward. The cars are incredibly fast, and you have to have 100% confidence in them, and neither of the M Sport drivers did.
David, I've been reading a lot of the comments from people about the Greensmith announcement to take the seat for Germany in place of Evans. Some people suggesting Hayden Paddon, of course, who missed out after a crash in testing. Eric Camilli, another option as well. But for me, why wouldn't you give it to Greensmith? Because he's one of their own. It's an opportunity to invest in youth as well. And I think all things considered, he's done all right. You know, he was brought in at very late notice for Finland. He had a bit more time to prepare earlier on for the season. And this time round as well for Germany, a bit more time as well just to get himself in the frame of mind and prepare for a tarmac rally, which should suit him a bit more.
Every time these guys sit in the car, they're getting more experience. Gus has done very well in the R5 car. the World Car is a different beast altogether, and he's learning how to cope with that beast and how to ride that beast into battle, and every mile will improve, and he's earned his position in that World Car. It's unfortunate that the Delphin is unable to compete. He's been advised by the doctors not to take part because of his back problem, and Germany would be incredibly hard on his back. So it's a sensible decision, and Gus has got the nod to do it. So yeah, I think it is the right thing to do. The Hayden Paddon thing was horribly unfortunate about what happened in Finland, but it was a pay drive that his sponsor had put together to get him into the event, and unfortunately he wasn't able to take advantage of it by turning the car into a ball of scrap.
Hmm. And David, a quick word on Craig Breen marking his return to the World Rally scene with a seventh place finish for Hyundai, posting some pretty decent times as well, and I just wonder if he's played himself into contention for more events this year as well, because, you know, we know that Wales Rally GB probably not one that Loeb or Sordo want to take. Turkey's a question mark as well, I would have thought, and of course we know that Loeb's only contracted to one more event this year as well. I just wonder if things could work out quite nicely for Craig Breen.
You say Craig Breen finished seventh. He did that because he let Thierry Neuville pass. So he was doing incredibly well in a car that he hasn't done a lot of mileage in. He got into the car at the beginning of the weekend. He was absolutely on the pace from the start, and he was posting some very, very good times and keeping it all together and keeping it on the island. He wasn't obviously the fastest Hyundai at the end of the day, but he did himself no harm at all, and there is definitely some reported information today that he has got the drive for Wales Rally GB. There are stories going around about that. He hasn't confirmed it himself as far as I can see at the moment, but that would be perfect for him, and as you say, the roughness of Turkey could just work for him as well. But he's an incredibly good driver. We've seen how head and shoulders above the normal rally drivers he is when you look at the results he's put together this year. He's out enjoying himself in cars. He's out on Ulster. He's got a Hyundai R5 to do Ulster in. So he's just getting seat time. He's doing these events. He could wrap up the Irish Tarmac Championship if he wins in Ulster. So he's had a very successful year in the second or third division, if you like, and he just needs that promotion back to the first division, and he's proven that he can do it.
And David, just finally, a very quick word on the Scottish scene, because we've got the Grampian Forest Rally to look forward to this weekend. Who should we be keeping an eye on there?
Well, Ewan Thorburn seems to be the name that's going to feature around three out of four events. Winner, he's won throughout the English Championship events he's been doing. He has been on the ball this year completely. So he's in the pound seats for that one. Gary Pearson has stepped down from his campaign this year. He's had a lot of bad luck. He's been quick in places, but just hasn't managed to put the results together. So he's taken his piggy bank and is saving his pennies to have another go next year. So he'll be missing from it. But, you know, Jock Armstrong's there, going to try and keep Ewan honest. And, yeah, it'll be a cracking event, a very reasonable entry. There's a lot of talk in the Scottish rallying scene at the moment about the lack of entries and the difficulties in putting events together. And there are a heck of a lot of events. And I think that's the major problem at the moment in the sport in Scotland, is that there are too many events for the people that are able to take part in the events. And then when you look at marshal requirements, which are more onerous than they've ever been, and the same core of marshals needed for rallies, for hill climbs, for sprints, for all sorts of different events. And if you were to look at the calendar of events every weekend in Scotland, you'd be amazed how much motorsport actually goes on that is not featured in the press or featured on these programmes, because it's club-level sport. And, yeah, it's amazing the amount of motorsport that's out there.
Absolutely. David, always a pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you. Do it again.
That's rally expert David Halley there.
And speaking of all those great Scottish events, let's find out the latest from the Scottish scene with Glenn Alcock.
Hi, good evening. Hello to everybody who's listening. So last weekend was a great weekend for the Scots. So you've already spoke to Rory Butcher, who pulled off that amazing overtake to clinch his second victory of the season. Sandy Mitchell got pole position, new lap record and two wins at Road America with his teammate Andrea Amici in the Lamborghini Paramus Wayne Taylor racing car. Ewan Mackay had a P3 finish at the Nürburgring 6 hours in his Volkenhorst Motorsport BMW. And Graham Davidson and Johnny Adam took victory in the two-hour British GT race at Brands Hatch, which puts them in a strong position for the Donington title decider. They dominated the race, and the season finale takes place on the 15th of September, and there's 5 crews in contention for the GT3 title and 6 for the GT4, so there's still a lot of excitement to be had in the closing part of that season. Gordy Much suffered a mechanical failure in race 1 whilst driving at Brands Hatch in his Ginetta GT5 challenge. But that was race 1. Race 2 was much better with a 3rd-place podium finish. And last week we talked about Calder Motorsport taking part in the British Sprint Championship at Kirkeston. Unfortunately, Colin Calder suffered a huge accident when at 150 mile an hour his rear suspension failed, causing the car to leave the circuit on the wet grass and then hitting the barrier and barrel rolling several times. But thankfully he's doing well, although he was a wee bit sore, so we'll send him best wishes. But it just reinforces the importance of the safety features of the car. And having your harness done uptight, that's what their message was, and I can also testify to that. I had my first taste of Superlap Scotland competing in Group G in the Scottish C1 Cup car at the weekend as well. The weather was pretty poor with a very wet track, which actually helped the C1 not be the slowest car at times. We had quite a big power deficit. We were at 68 brake horsepower. I think the next thing was about 200. So the pressure of the Superlap is quite a unique experience, so it's like the old one-shot qualifying in Formula 1. You get an out lap, then you've got your flying lap, your super lap, and then your in lap, and it's compared against times that you've done earlier in the day. Really, really good. I really enjoyed it, and then we also competed in the chase race, although our power deficit really hampered us with that. So a great series to get an introduction to driving fast on track and start competing in motorsport. And quite a lot of the drivers were interested in the C1 too, which was good. So maybe we'll see some new drivers on the grid in the SMRC. And I was back at Knock Hill today getting a taste of what it's like to drive a Scottish Legends car and the unlimited experience. This means that the car was unrestricted and in race spec, so you do 10 laps to begin with it restricted just to check you're okay with it, and then they take the pin out and give you the full performance of the car. Interestingly, I was driving the car of another Largs racing driver, which is Charlie Fraser, so I had to behave as he knows where I live, and I didn't even roll it once. If you don't know much about the Legends, the cars are modelled on American Ford, Chevy and Dodge cars from the 1930s and 1940s at 5/8 scale. They're powered by a 1200cc Yamaha motorcycle engine, and they weigh less than 550 kilograms. They're very good fun cars to drive and always provide really, really interesting, great entertainment when you're at Knock Hill spectating.
Excellent, Glenn. And just finally, a brief word on, we spoke to Rory Butcher earlier and he was talking about the benefits of looking ahead to Knock Hill in the British Touring Car Championship very soon. Always a great place to go. And for anyone who's not been there, I mean, what would your message be to encourage them to come along?
I think you've just got to get there today. It was an absolutely stunning day. And you can see, look right across to all the bridges, the Queensferry Crossing and the Forth Bridge. But it's a great, great circuit to drive. There was a guy there today who had never driven on track before and he'd never been to Knock Hill, and he thoroughly enjoyed it. For such a small track, it is very, very technical. It's very challenging. It's great in both directions. I think I prefer the reverse direction. But from a spectator point of view as well, I've had a lot of people coming along this year that haven't been before, and they've really, really enjoyed it. So as David Halley was saying, there's so much motorsport on in Scotland. You've just got to try and support it and get along. If you look online, you'll find out that there's a lot of stuff happening just down the road from you.
Oh, absolutely. Glenn, always a pleasure. Thanks very much for your time here on Pole Position.
Cheers, guys.
That's the Superfast Scots roundup there with Glenn Alcock. And unfortunately, that's all we've got time for on Pole Position this week, Adam. I mean, that was hectic.
Absolutely, and there's more motorsport as well this weekend with the conclusion of the W Series.
Yes.
Jamie Chadwick going for the inaugural at Crowns. That'll be interesting to see what happens there. I'm having flashbacks to the 2012 F1 season, the way the title permutations are working out, because she's got a 13-point advantage over her nearest challenger, so she'll be hoping that she can take victory.
Absolutely, and that's all we've got time for, as we say, but we'll be back from 8 o'clock next Thursday night to do it all again. My thanks to Adam, to our guests, and to you for joining us as well. Stay tuned for The Rock Zone coming up next on Rock Sport Radio.
Love music, live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.